Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to welcome you to this evening with Nick Hornby. He will talk about his novel, A Long Way Down. There is a place on the English Channel called Beachy Head with a drop of 450 feet. It is a well-known place for people who want to commit suicide. Nick Hornby had read about Beachy Head and wondered, what happens when several suicidal people meet? What do they do? Do they greet each other? Do they look into each other's eyes? Is there a code for such people? Does one say, after you please? This was the spark for his novel, in which four characters meet on a tall building in London called Topper's House. To top oneself means to commit suicide. Topper's House is the preferred location for people who intend to take their lives. And now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Nick Hornby.
I have already told people about the original idea that you read about Beachy Head, but what happened after you read that article?
Well, there were lots of components to it. I also have a bridge near my home, which people jump from quite often, and I drive past it quite often. And so, you know, every time I drove under the bridge, I thought some more about it. And then I started to think about what I wanted to write about in terms of different aspects of unhappiness. I wanted to write about creative frustration, and I wanted to write about the whole problem with disability. I wanted to write about celebrity in Britain. Lots and lots of different ideas and characters started coming to mind.
But what kind of research did you do into the whole suicide thing? For example, is that Aaron T. Beck, the suicide intent scale, is that authentic?
Yes, this is a little sort of scale that's quoted in the book about how serious you are about committing suicide. So, you know, if you do it on your own away from people, then you score a certain number of points. If you try it, you know, when people are watching, then you lose points. It's like this. And but it is a serious psychological tool to ascertain quite how serious somebody was when they attempted to jump. Yes, there was that. I went on, I looked at some chat rooms on the internet. There are a lot of quite disturbing suicide chat rooms where people who are thinking about killing themselves talk to each other and post up best ways of doing it and all of this kind of thing. And there was also, just at the right moment, a long and fantastic article in The New Yorker about people who jumped off the San
Francisco
Bridge.
Golden Gate Bridge, yeah. I translated that article.
Yeah, did you?
Yes.
It's an article of genius, I think. did you say anything about it?
No.
The one thing which Martin quotes in the book, one thing that I loved in that article, was that they interviewed survivors who had jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And one guy who survived, he said that the second that he jumped, he realized that the only thing wrong with his life that he couldn't fix was the fact that he just jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And I thought it was just a wonderful, wonderful observation about suicide and the dangers inherent in suicide. And it very much informed the spirit, I think, of this book.
I was also wondering about, for example, there's this passage where JJ says who his favorite authors are. Mm. And some of them seem to be yours, too. Could you say something about that? It's something you haven't read yet, so perhaps you have to tell us about this.
JJ really likes Dickens. He really likes Richard Yates, American author from the 50s and 60s. Yeah, it was things that I was reading at the time that I was writing that I loved and I felt I wanted to endorse in some way. Revolutionary Road in particular, because it's a very bleak book and maybe associated again with the spirit of this one. But yeah, his books are my books.
All of them. Faulkner, for example, too.
Faulkner, I'm less keen on. I thought it would be more him than me.
Mm-hmm. Because just now there's this other book of Nick Hornby's which has come out in German under the title Mein Leben als Leser, the polysyllabic spree. And in there, it seems to me that the word literary is for you a four-letter word. Now, one of the things you do in that book is you say it's something for real wankers when things get sort of self-referential. And interestingly, in one of the passages you just read, it is Jess who reminds us that we are actually reading a book. Why did you do that?
It's a sort of logical extension of the idea that these characters are talking directly to the reader. I wanted to acknowledge that there was some kind of monologue taking place, that it was... It felt to me like it underlines the intimacy between the character and the book, that if the character acknowledges that these words are written down, then it seems more real than pretending it was in some other form.
But why is it just one character, and why is it the character who really never reads?
Why it's the character who never reads is because I think it always complicates things to do something like that.
And to come back to this, what you said, at one point in the polysyllabic spree, you say that for you, a literary novel is a novel that doesn't work. If, you know, I had to translate it back from German into English, so I'm not sure whether this is how you put it. Could you please elaborate on this? Or in other words, if you hate literary novels, what would you call what you do? Literary as opposed to what?
I don't think that I write literary novels. For me, this is a new idea, the notion of the literary novel. I mean, it's a 20th century idea. Now, suddenly, we have co-opted all sorts of other authors like Dickens and Austen and people like this into the canon of literature. But they were not literary novelists when they wrote them. They were
You have to explain that. This is something we don't know. What is this?
Okay, well, I mean, you know that Dickens and Shakespeare are regarded as being high culture, but they were not high culture when they wrote. I mean, Shakespeare and Dickens wrote for the people. They wrote to be watched and read at the time. Dickens wrote books in serial form. He sold extracts every month so that you read like a soap opera, a Dickens novel. And, you know, when the old Curiosity Shop was coming out, which is mostly about one girl dying, people were waiting on the dock in the harbour in New York wanting to know if she'd died or not. And this is the kind of effect that Dickens was having on a popular audience in the 19th century. And then I think with the birth of modernism and the Bloomsbury Group and Virginia Woolf and these people, there came a new idea that there would be a separate kind of book that was for highly educated people, that was more difficult, which was more about language, less about the world that the language portrayed than about the language itself. And this is where we have the kind of Booker Prize-winning book versus a different kind of book, which certainly I would number my books among, but also thrillers, also, you know, certain kinds of... I don't think Graham Greene was a literary novelist. He was very interested in the world that he was describing. And we have, I think, too much literary fiction that alienates people, that people find difficult to understand, that's very slow, about characters that nobody recognizes. And that's why I say, for me, it's a novel that doesn't work. It feels as though the author should write another three or four drafts until we understand it properly. Still, for me, the novel is about communicating directly with people, and anything that's not like that, I am suspicious of.
I was very surprised to read that you found your own voice as a writer while you were reading Anne Tyler.
Yeah.
Could you please explain us about this?
Well, the American writer Anne Tyler was one of the first people I'd read, first of all, who could shift tones. So she was not afraid to write comedy and tragedy within the same book. Her wonderful novel, The Accidental Tourist, the central couple have suffered before the book begins the death of their child. And yet the book is in parts extremely funny. And at no point do you feel as though this humour is inappropriate. It's just a recognition that sometimes funny things happen and sometimes sad things happen. And I had not read a book like this that was simple in its language, complicated in its feelings, accessible, all of these things. And the moment that I read her, I for the first time felt that's what I want to do. I don't know if I can do that as well as her, but finally I understand what kind of writing it is I want to do. And she was just extremely important to me. And it felt more or less as though I sat down to write properly for the first time almost the moment I'd finished her book.
I have a little quotation from you from a rock song.
Well, these are very scary. These are scary. Go on.
Book after book, I get hooked every time the writer talks to me like a friend. I'm sure you must like this, but who is it?
No, don't know.
Mark Bolan, Spaceball Ricochet.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But on the cover of the German edition of 31 Songs, it says, Nick Hornby is a writing god. How does that feel to you?
Yeah, it feels about right.